getting sober requires a lot more than mind over matter, a lot more than willpower. It's about leveraging the support around you. People in recovery typically need a mix of medical help, emotional support, and changes in lifestyle to manage their addiction, not just mental determination. As both a therapist and someone embracing the recovery lifestyle, there's one tool I always recommend to people needing extra accountability: SoberLink. SoberLink is a high-tech breath analyzer system designed to help you get and stay sober. And here's why I love it. You'll test the same day every day, eliminating testing anxiety. Friends and family receive instant test results, helping you rebuild trust and preventing relapse. Accountability is a part of that, and it's something to really be embraced. Devices have built-in facial recognition, so your support circle knows you're testing, and tamper-resistant sensors flag any attempts at trying to beat the system, so your sobriety is never questioned. So let 2024 be your best year yet. Visit soberlink.com/TAM to sign up and receive $50 off your device. That's soberlink.com/TAM. And let accountability be your guide. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. My name is Dwayne Osterlund, and I'm your host, and we are on to another episode. So today, my guest is Chris Drybach, and he's going to share his powerful story of recovery from several recovery attempts, going to prison, getting caught up in the criminal justice system, and finally with a compassionate judge who sent him to another treatment facility. He was able to finally find his way with some compassionate help. And he took his experience and founded several sober living homes and treatment facilities. And he also created Second Chance PA, which was a pre-arrest diversionary program. Really just put his entrepreneurial spirit together and harnessed all of that to create some incredible opportunities for people in recovery. And he's going to talk about his new endeavor, A Night of Recovery. So stay tuned for this episode. I think you're going to get a lot out of it. It was great talking with Chris. He has so much passion and drive and just really goes forward almost without fear to create these amazing resources for people who are struggling with addiction. So I think you're going to get a lot out of this episode and hearing Chris's story. And if you're getting a lot out of the Addicted Mind podcast, write us a review in iTunes. That really does help the podcast get found, or wherever you get your podcast. That would be awesome. And don't forget, you can join our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook and click join and continue the conversation online there as well. All right, let's go ahead and get this episode started. All right, everyone, welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. My guest today is Chris Drybach, and Chris, why don't you just jump in? We were already talking before we started recording about being really excited about what's happening and getting the messages from people on your new project and Night of Recovery. So let's just jump in right there because I feel your passion already.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dwayne, again, thanks for having me here. I'm excited to get to talk to you and everybody that's listening. And I'll give everybody a quick disclaimer. I'm getting over a stomach bug, so if I look like I'm dying, I'm actually not dying, probably.
I appreciate you sticking through it and coming on to the podcast anyway, so thank you.
Well, I had to bail on you before because I had that flight to Tampa that somehow just magically got booked right over the time. And even if I was throwing up, man, I wasn't going to reschedule this one.
So. Oh, thanks. Thank you.
But yeah, I mean, I've it's been so thrilling ever since we recorded Night of Recovery live from the Moravian Center and got it dropped on Prime Video. You know, just being able to meet with different movie critics and like newspaper writers and TV people. I got to fly down and hang out on Great Day Live Tampa with my friend Shannon Moore, who's also in the Night of Recovery. You know, just the response from each of those things and the number of people we've been able to meet and impact at each of those corners has been so unbelievable. Like, it's truly the spice of life for me to be able to impact people in every corner, people that I've never been able to talk to yet, people who can relate to the pain, the suffering, the struggle that occurred with me.
Well, it's energizing because you know hope is out there, right? You've gone through it. You've seen it. And to be able to give that hope and pass that hope along, I think is like one of the best gifts we can give to others and to ourselves. It's just, it fills you with joy and passion and and all of that. So let's jump in a little bit of and talk about a little bit of your story and how this all started, not just this production, but all of your treatment centers that you've put together, your sober housing that you've put together, you know, just a passion to help others and bring people up.
Yeah, I mean, that is truly the passion for me, is watching people taste success, watching people be happy, find themselves. And a lot of that comes from my past of not knowing who I was and struggling mightily in a whole lot of different areas. And, you know, short story long, you know, I grew up in a good suburban area. I was a good suburban kid. I never should have gotten anywhere near anything like heroin, but, you know, life didn't turn out that way. And heroin grabbed me, and it took me for a little ride for a few years. And that ride took me into some fun places like treatment centers and incarceration again, and treatment center again, and incarceration again, and over and over and over, kind of ad infinitum. By the age of 20, I felt like I was on a legitimate vicious cycle that was never going to end. I thought I was following in the footsteps of some 40 and 50 year olds I knew at the time who were just going to jail, getting out, failing, going to jail, getting out, failing. And that was kind of the societal answer to addiction at the time in the mid 2000s or the mid aughts, if you will.
Yeah. And, yeah.
You know, to be stuck in that time where like brain science hadn't fully been accepted and, you know, society certainly hadn't moved towards brain science being fully accepted. You know, It was a struggle, and it didn't help me at 18 years old to get tossed in a cage, and it didn't help me to be tossed back out with no guidance, and then to get tossed back in, to get tossed back out, to get tossed back in and live in that cycle. It's pretty dehumanizing and it's pretty demoralizing. And while there were a ton of well-intentioned, good-hearted, pure people trying to help me, like progressive judges, they would send me to treatment every time I went to jail. And they didn't do that back in the day. You know, they were just like, look at this 18-year-old kid. He's a nut. He just went out and burglarized houses and we caught him, you know? And like, look at this kid. He ran from parole. He went to Buffalo, New York and North Carolina and caught charges in both those places. He's clearly an idiot. He needs help, you know? And like all these well-intentioned people were trying to help me. And I couldn't even see that I deserved help. I had gotten so far down in the scale of self-loathing that I didn't even believe recovery was possible. I didn't even know recovery was a real thing. I just thought it was a bunch of old angry white dudes in a basement somewhere being mad at each other and like yelling about their lawnmower.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really, really hopeless at that moment. Like you're like, there's no hope for me. This is the life that I've been given, and I'm just going to recycle this over and over, and that's the pain. And you got to get that message. Like you said, the brain science doesn't catch up. The treatment facility just, you know, not the treatment facility, but the system just puts you back into prison. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it's hopeless. It's horrible. But something happened here because it didn't turn out that way.
So serendipity, the universe, providence, whatever you want to call it, they were all operative for me at the same time in 2007. Because on August 27th, 2007, I was wandering around a region of Allentown, Pennsylvania that I theoretically had no business other than heroin being in. And a little black Honda, you know, pulled me over while walking. And it was the Allentown Vice Squad. They were sent as messengers to take me out of the life I was living. And they tossed me back in Lehigh County Prison where I belonged. I became number 0131644 again. I traded in my name, Chris Dreisbach, for that number one more time. And I didn't think there was anything different about this. I called my dad and I had the same disappointing dad talk. I'm like, hey, sorry, man. You know, it happened again. Here I am in the Allentown Police Department. You know, I'm going back to jail. See you in 8 months or whatever it was. Right. But I remember the pain on the other side, the like desperation, the disappointment, the everything negative you could think of coming from my dad. Even anger.
What a moment of like, you know, that despair, like that darkness.
And it wasn't even something that registered with me at the time.
Yeah.
Because at the time I was purely here. I'm getting arrested again. I have to go do this. It was all me. It was all self. But upon future reflection with much wiser people, I realized the pain that I put that old man through. And he's not really even old. He's 18 years older than me. We just call him old.
Right. Right. And put him through, but then also your own darkness. I mean, it's just like, that's the addiction, right? Just, it just spreads darkness around it.
Yes. And it's just, it was such a moment. And I went into jail and, you know, nothing changed. I just went back in there and got up in my rack and hung out and read books. And, you know, eventually the judge was like, yeah, dude, you're 20. You know, obviously he didn't call me dude because he's a judge, but right. Paraphrased version. Yeah, dude, you know, you're 18 or you're 20 at this point. Like, I've seen you 3 or 4 times. Let's get it figured out and send you to rehab again. And he sent me to another rehab. Shocking enough that he sent me to another rehab. And this rehab was a little bit better than the previous ones I had gone to. The other ones were those therapeutic communities where they teach you to keep your shirt tucked in and fix your behavior. And somehow that'll magically make you not do drugs. Right.
Doesn't work.
No, not even slightly in a little bit. But, you know, that was another issue, is I was never even presented the proper treatment. And finally, yeah. I was presented it. And not saying that the place did anything magical, but they gave me the best they could. And the counselor that I had was much, much smarter than I was. And he was this old hippie guy who recently died, unfortunately. But, you know, he gave me the sweatshirt off his back. And what is amusing about that is I'm 6'5" and 230 at the absolute lightest. And this guy was probably 5'8", 150 at the heaviest. And I had no clothing. I got there with just the jail clothes, you know, that I had. And he gave me a sweatshirt off of his back. And it was a moment that I will never forget.
Wow.
In my entire life, because I squeezed my big ugly body into that little tiny sweatshirt to try and stay warm. And he gave me, you know, just that first inkling of love, that first inkling of like, maybe I do deserve a little bit of peace here.
And that moment of compassion, that like, yeah, you have value, it just like eked itself in a little bit.
Yeah. I'll be forever grateful to that man. I mean, you know, and then he sent me to a halfway house, pretty much against my will, other than, you know, parole making me do it, you know. And look, I'm getting a little teary-eyed thinking about this guy because he made such an impact on my life.
Wow.
And, you know, he ended up sending me pretty much against my will to this halfway house in Lititz, Pennsylvania, which is not Allentown. It's not where I'm from. It's cornfields, Amish people. And, you know, while I was here, the halfway house forced me to go to meetings and forced me to reach out to people and forced me to do all this stuff under the guise of, you know, not going back to jail. I complied.
Right, right.
Over the course of my compliance with these things, my spirit was awakened. I was taught new ideas and how to step away from my selfishness. And obviously, over the last 17 years, I have failed miserably in maintaining perfect lack of self. But I got to tell you, those foundational moments at that halfway house allowed me to build up. And, you know, they let me get a job. They let me do these different things. And when I got that first job, I looked in a phone book. That's how I can date that I've been sober too long.
Right.
I got my first job in recovery through a phone book.
Wow. Yeah, I know. It's like, I hear you. Right? Yeah. What is that? A phone book? A payphone? Yeah. I don't understand what that is. But, you know, I'm just hearing like that moment of compassion, and I can tell just listening to you that is like that moment is ingrained in you in a deep way. And it sounds like it was that little tipping point that offers that cascade of openness just enough for you to like go, wait a minute, maybe something's different.
Yeah.
And then kind of being put into that space where now it's kind of like hammered in a little bit more. But it sounds like in a way that was compassionate and kind.
Yeah. And not even that at that moment did I have the mental capacity to realize what it was or recognize how to take that and turn it into a practical life or recovery. I just felt. And sometimes that's the first step to anything, is just feeling and accepting that you have feelings and accepting that, like, maybe it's okay. You know, maybe it's just all right that I'm a messed up 20 or 21 year old and I've done nothing but be in jail my entire adult life and disappoint everybody I've ever met. And here's this guy who doesn't know me from a hole in the wall, man. And he gives me a sweatshirt right off his back because he knows I'm cold.
Wow.
You know, and now I'm getting real emotional, you know, and I hate doing that on these things, but like, this stuff is so real and it's so deep. And just to think of people who feel the way I used to feel, I just want to be that guy with the sweatshirt in every possible case.
It's so beautiful to hear that and to touch that piece, because, you know, there's so much suffering out there. And when we can give that to another human, you know, especially when we've been in that darkness and then someone comes along and tells us we're worthwhile, like, you're worth it. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's an amazing experience, and it brings us to the journey, and it is emotional. I mean, it's so powerful.
Yeah. I'll tell you, like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I would have probably rather died than cry on anything. And I just like recovery and being open and being able to accept who you are and what you are.
Yeah.
It just allows for so many things. And I'll tell you a quick little story. I get asked to go do a lot of things and talk at a lot of places. And I had some great friends who do tremendous work here in the local Harrisburg community in Pennsylvania. And they asked me to come speak at a suicide prevention conference. And that's not my wheelhouse at all.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll talk recovery, I'll talk business, I'll talk pretty much anything with anybody, but like suicide prevention is not something I dive into very often. And I accepted because I accept basically everything. And I went there, it was like an hour and a half conference, not a ton of people in the room, maybe like 50, 60, you know, grandmothers, mothers, you know, people who've experienced suicide loss, people who've experienced, you know, attempting to take their own lives. We got so raw and so real. I was openly bawling in this room for an absurd number of minutes during this talk. And just being able to connect with all of those people in that room was such a deeply fulfilling moment that, you know, I'll never be afraid to cry publicly ever again, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Can you talk about that? Because, you know, like we go to your old self, right? Where it's locked away in like, this is my life and I'm just I'm not worth it, to this person who now can do that, right? The opening of the, I don't know if you want to call it the spirit, the soul, the whatever. It's like, there's this transition to this new person. And I would love to hear about that journey.
I mean, that is a constantly moving journey.
Right.
You know, 17 years deep, I still get hit with stuff. I still create my own problems. I still move on to a new version of myself, a new version of understanding fairly frequently.
But you have an openness to it. That's what I hear. Like, you have an openness to it. You're open to that process now. Where they don't, yeah. You know, you don't have to have the people like hammer. I mean, sometimes we need to get some advice from people to say, hey, you know, what's going on? But we're a little more open to it. Like,
oh, I'm at a point where for the most part, you know, when I'm struggling, I have a whole squad of people that are around me to let me know I'm being stupid.
Yeah, that's always, and, that's, you know, good.
I've made significant errors. I've done stupid things. And I've hurt a lot of people along the way. But just trying to be better day after day and trying to, you know, learn from each mistake and become a greater version of myself is a main part of recovery. It's a main part of what I learned back in 2007. It's just, don't be as hard on myself as I used to be. And when you make a mistake, own it and keep moving. And, yeah, you know, I'm by no means perfect, but that transformational moment really came from consistent work on not being so selfish and consistent work on not focusing on myself and what I get and where I am and who I am and how I am, and really just seeing what I can bring to the universe and what part can I play in the advancement of somebody else's life. And those moments and those thoughts have led to the most beautiful things that have happened to me in all of the last 17 years. And
it's,
I mean, that's, yeah, a tough one. There's just been many different things that have happened in those 17 years that, like, it would take probably a 6-hour podcast to even figure out where to start on that one.
Yeah, totally. But I think you say something really important, that consistency piece, like that consistent effort to go inward, the consistent effort to think of others, the consistent effort to be your best self and kind of walk that path is where hope lies.
Yeah. And for folks who are in recovery now, kind of long-term, short-term, any term, not letting mistakes beat you down is the biggest key. I've lost more friends and loved ones than I can even count on 10 hands who, you know, people have just made a little mistake and let it burn them up. And, you know, even a huge mistake you can come back from. It's not the end of your life. Hopefully it's not the end of your life. And, you, yeah, know, if you're still breathing, there's still a good shot for you. And, you know, my path doesn't have to be your path. Dwayne's path doesn't have to be your path.
That's right.
We'll find your path. And hopefully, you know, there are going to be great people like Dwayne and me around you to help you get there. without judgment, without shame, and without stigma, without fear, because that fear crushes more people than I even care to count.
I know. It breaks my heart. It's like, no, reach out, man. There's so many people out there that want to help you. You're worth it. And it's like you want to hammer that in there, you know, you're like, come on, you can do it. You know, you got it. It's in you. You've got the spirit. Go for it. Yeah. And so I'm right there with you. So let's transition a little bit and kind of talk about, as you got through this, you started wanting to help others. And so you started doing a lot of these businesses and sober living and treatment centers. And you talked about, like, you know, good treatment centers that are evidence-based, that use science, that use the current knowledge we have, the best knowledge that we have, to help people with addiction. So I want to talk about, like, kind of, you got through that part, you went through that darkness, you started to work on yourself consistently, and then you said, look, I got to get back. So I want to hear about that part too.
There was this weird serendipitous thing that kind of happened. And a lot of my friends at that halfway house that I'd since moved out of, they were all about to be homeless at the same time. So I went ahead and took, you know, what tiny savings I had from waiting tables at that diner. And then going back to work at the treatment center I'd gone through, which was 70 miles away from my house for $9 an hour. It didn't really make much fiscal sense, but spiritually it was wonderful.
Right.
So what happened was a whole bunch of my friends were about to be homeless at the same time. And I grabbed up with another guy and we rented a house for them to move into. Realized we kind of needed to, like, guide them a little bit because they were guys brand new in recovery. And we developed, like, a 64-point guideline sheet for them to kind of show them the way, guide them a little bit. And what happened was, like, of that original 10 guys, I think 8 of them are still sober from 2010, which is a little bit absurd. And
That's great.
More people wanted to come be a part of it. There was such a family atmosphere and just so much love and recovery in that house that we had to get another one to accommodate people, and then another one to accommodate more people. And then I got a really wise advisor, my friend Steve, who was actually my second landlord when I moved here after, you know, jail and halfway house. And he said, Chris, you need to make your money work for you. Let me show you how to do this, and let me show you how to buy houses, and I'll give you a loan to help you buy your first one with, you know, 10% interest. And I was like, oh, all right, you know, cool. I love that.
And
he showed me how to be an adult. He showed me how to own real estate, how to make money. And I found out that I loved it. I loved business. I loved helping people. It was just truly, like, serendipitous moments and being aware of opportunity and aware of circumstances around me. And so we ended up getting up to about 13 or 14 houses and 160 beds, I think it was. And, you know, that just that spawned a construction company because a couple of the guys in the house really wanted to, you know, show other people the trades that they knew and build their own businesses. And we blew that thing up into a million a year in revenue rather quickly on the idea that we're helping people get their lives back together. And it was such a beautiful thing. I learned a different industry, and then I learned a different industry, and then, you know, more and more businesses came up, and eventually we opened Blueprints, the treatment center, and I gave the recovery houses away to a group of the guys that had come through and had been a huge part of the success. And they took that on when we moved into the treatment industry. So there was no question of ethics or anything like that.
Yeah.
And Blueprints has just been a blessing and a half since 2016. It really just kept opening up opportunities. I discovered that I know a good bit about business. I have a little bit of acumen in that area, and I love helping other people achieve their dreams. So it kind of led to me investing in other companies, helping people do startups, you know, and just keeping little tiny pieces of them and staying on as a guide and staying on as an advisor. And really just some of the most beautiful things have happened as a result of that. I've gotten to watch people explode in their personal lives and grow to ridiculous success. And I mean, I can't tell you, there's so many stories I could tell you, but they're all beautiful in their own way. And just watching people succeed and feel that success and feel, you know, the love and the value, and then further give it away to the next group of people. And just watching that multiplicative factor of awesomeness is another one of the most beautiful blessings I have.
Yeah. And I love what you're saying, because it's like, you know, once you, I guess, got out of your own way, you know, really started to focus on other people and helping other people, interesting enough, people show up to help you do that. I mean, I really believe Generally speaking, I mean, there are bad people in the world too, and they cause a lot of harm. I mean, I don't want to, you know, pretend that's not real, but there are many, many people out there that want to help. They want to pass on their knowledge. Like that guy said, look, I see what you're doing. I can help you. I have this knowledge. I want to give it to you. I want to give you this experience. And you were open enough not to take it, but to receive it. That's what I make up. And then pass it on to the next person and give the next person hope and the next person the ability to do something with their life. And I think once we frame that, it's the sky's the limit for everybody.
It really is. And I don't consider myself all that special. I'm just a big, long-haired, goofy, bearded, you know, nut job. But like the number of people I've been able to set on the path to wealth building through landlordship and homeownership and real estate. I ended up going to get my real estate license, and we recently opened a real estate brokerage and a property management firm. And, you know, we started a Fresh Start initiative where we're inviting landlords to come join us and let us manage their properties without credit requirements, without criminal history requirements, and just give people more access to housing. And like, that's just such a tiny portion of my portfolio, if you will. But think about that one person who can't get an apartment anywhere on earth because nobody will give them a chance. Now, if we can get a coalition of landlords in this area and maybe even a spark of an idea into other areas, how many lives can be changed just by that one tiny piece of my, quote, portfolio?
Yeah.
And that's why I don't think of anything as insignificant, because even the most insignificant actions we take now can have the most massive implications for other people. And
yeah,
you know, that's why I'll always make an hour available for a podcast. That's why I'll always take a phone call that I don't want to take in the middle of the afternoon. That's why you just never know where your time, your space, your experience, and your heart can lend somebody else a leg up.
Yeah, I'm glad you're saying that. You know, early in my career working in mental health and everything, when I was working at a treatment center, and it was treatment in lieu of jail time, right? But man, I felt like I was fighting the system half the time, right? Like being able to, like, you know, and trying to bring in that compassionate element. It was a little bit, the treatment center was a little bit old school and, you know, kind of like, you know, it wasn't very compassionate. I mean, they were trying to help, I think, good intentions and everything. But at the same time, I thought it was more shame-based than compassionate-based. Yes. And I don't think that really works in the long term.
No.
But yeah, fighting against the system. I mean, you know, it's like I felt like, okay, you know, this guy, we got to find some place for you to live, you know, like, but we can't find any place. And what was so frustrating to me, I'm sorry, I'm going to vent a little bit, was like that these guys were in jail because of addiction. They were good people, but they were hooked up in addiction and they wanted their life better. I mean, it was like, once you sit down and you're with them and talking to them, you see it. And yet the system sometimes makes it incredibly difficult. So I'm so glad that you're doing that and then providing that to people who need that extra help to just get started.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, that kind of led Blueprints and my team over at Blueprints to do some things in 2018. We linked up with some local police chiefs in the area, and we developed a thing called Second Chance PA, where we send certified recovery specialists out on scene with law enforcement, with the blessing of our district attorney here in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, Heather Adams, a wonderful woman. She allows those officers on the street to make a judgment call as to whether to follow through with criminal charges or send the individual to treatment, with their permission, obviously.
Yeah.
But we were able to implement this in 2018. And since then, we've seen 3,200 cases of people being able to step out of the criminal justice system and into the healthcare system. And if we could implement that on a larger scale nationwide, I imagine that our overdose crisis, our opioid crisis, and a whole lot of other crises would be deadened pretty significantly if we all just team up and work for the health of our community. And we've been able to prove such a beautiful model here in just Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, that I just truly wish more places would look at it and try and, you know, step into that restorative justice category instead of saddling guys like me with felonies for the rest of our lives, which I do have a felony. And I'm happy about my felony because I wear it as a badge of honor now to show other felons that you really have to slow down. Yeah, absolutely.
You can do it.
So it's not easy to ask everybody to just, you know, be okay with being a felon and then not have simple access to jobs and housing and healthcare and bad system.
And you know, I mean, in my work too, I saw the same thing, and in some ways it's getting better, and projects like yours are helping and educating people. And I think some of this, there's still a lot of stigma out there, but it's opening up, and people are realizing, you know, how addiction works at the brain, and we're getting places. So that's hopeful to me. So let's talk about Night of Recovery and how that came about. And you just released it on Amazon. And so let's jump in there.
Yeah. So Night of Recovery really started from a tour Blueprints did. In 2018, we called it the Communities Against Addiction Tour, and we partnered up with a guy who was running for Senate out here, and he called it his Addiction Is Not a Crime Tour, which really just fit with our model, and we loved it so much. And we got real tired of when addiction became like a hot-button issue, if you will. We would have all these town hall meetings, and nobody would say anything. It would just be like grandstanding for no reason.
Right.
It would be all about awareness, but there would be no awareness brought. It was just not compelling, not interesting, and very uninspired in a lot of cases. And we thought, how crazy would it be if we hit 18 cities in Pennsylvania, brought interesting speakers, and made it this community discussion? And so we did that. We were a little bit crazy. We hit 18 cities in Pennsylvania across a couple months. And in that, you know, I had to go across the state to the western side of Pennsylvania. I don't know how much you know about the geography here, but there's, you know, Pittsburgh on one side, Philly on the other, and Lancaster's kind of right in the middle there. And I didn't have much, you know, recognition or know too many people out west. So I reached out to some friends that hooked me up with Sean Waltman, who was with the WWE as X-Pac and the 1-2-3 Kid. And I discovered, you know, he was in recovery, and I reached out to, I don't even know who it was, like his agent or something. And I was just like, hey man, we're doing this addiction tour. And like, I don't know if Sean would be interested in coming out and helping us. So it was just like a complete flyer, you know, like there's no way this dude's going to even answer me. And like 45 minutes later, I get a call on my personal cell phone from John. And he was like, oh, bro, I'm so honored that you'd even think of me. And like, oh, dude, like, I'd be so happy to fly out and like just come help.
And that's awesome.
Just crushed my soul with like excitement. You know, that here's this guy I watched on TV as a kid. I idolized him, and he's just hyped to come out and help us. And so he came out for 3 dates on that tour, and the response was unbelievable. I mean, people
just loved it.
They were so inspired. It kind of stuck in the back of my mind. And into 2022, I'd been working with the WWE a little bit and became aware of a guy on Twitter who was with the WWE. I didn't really know him very well because I didn't watch much at the time. And I never go on Twitter, but one morning at like 2 a.m., I was scrolling Twitter while I was on the toilet or something. And I saw him put up a post, and we became aware of each other, like followed each other on Twitter after the Xbox stuff. I never talked to him or anything. And I think he put up a post like, I fucked up and I need help, or just something that indicated this dude could use some help. And I sent him a message also, again, thinking he's never going to respond. But I said, hey, dude, you know, if you're struggling, like, I don't know you from a hole in the ground, but if you need help, come on up here, man. We'll scholarship you, take care of you. And he responded right away. And he was just in a detox center in San Antonio at the bottom of his bottom. And he accepted our help. And something happened that he couldn't get in touch with the WWE guys. And somebody was trying to scam him to go into another rehab or something. And he ended up coming up to Lancaster and getting treatment and getting help. And he decided to stay out here. And we decided to, you know, build a company called Three Legacies Wrestling. And now he has this opportunity to like have his own company and have his own beautiful wrestling community here in Lancaster. And, you know, with him being up here and living this new life and wanting to give back, combined with the experience we had with X-Pac, we linked up with Shannon Moore, who's also involved in this documentary, and Kurt Hussey. And we decided we wanted to do some Nights of Recovery and really bring that community vibe of education, community, and love, and just give it to the world. And it has been magical. We did our first one in February last year at the Ware Center here in Lancaster, and that featured X-Pac, you know, Sean, Kurt, Jesus, and a special appearance by our friend Brandon Novak, because that's actually amazing. Turned out that Kurt was inspired by some of Brandon's videos, and that was like what led him to jump into recovery. And it just so happened that Brandon was like in Philadelphia at the time. And I reached out and I said, hey man, you really inspired this guy. Would you be willing to come do this surprise thing on camera? And he did. And man, he came up here and knocked it out of the park, surprised the crap out of Kurt. It was just a beautiful moment to be caught. Now, that's not on the Night of Recovery that we have on Prime, but that one hopefully you'll be able to see soon as well. The one on Prime, that was just an intimate little gathering at the Moravian Center in Lancaster. And we had this beautiful, intimate night, you know, a couple hours of talks and recovery. And, you know, we had a great audience of local, you know, community members, and some treatment centers came out and had nice resource tables and really just a good community education evening. And then thankfully, Babakonda Productions, which is another one of my organizations, you know, films them, edits them, and sends them out for distribution. And it's just been so wonderful to hear across the country how much impact and how much, you know, these talks have given to people. It's just so beautiful to think that, you know, all that work that went into organizing the nights, the emotion and the energy of the actual night itself, and then the hard work of the production crew afterwards, all that work goes into just transformational moments for people. And I could not be more excited to continue working on more of these and continue bringing them to new areas. We have hopefully an upcoming one in Tampa. We're talking to some folks in Cleveland. We're talking to some folks in Seattle. We're talking to some folks in Colorado. I mean, we've got, you know, just a lot of areas that are interested in bringing Night of Recovery out. And I could not be more excited to be able to get out there and do those things. And hopefully, if you're listening to this, take some time, jump on Prime Video, and check out Night of Recovery.
Check it out.
The Moravian Center. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's just like bringing, you know, I just hear like you're showing people there's a different way that we can connect human to human with compassion and love and kindness, and we can lift each other up by doing that. And it benefits all of us to take that stance. And I love it, Chris. It's been awesome to have you on the Addicted Mind podcast. Just share your story, share your hope, share your optimism. It's contagious, and it shows people that, look, there's a way to go. There's a way out. You can do this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And don't be afraid to reach out. You know, you can find me on all kinds of social medias. You can find me literally anywhere on earth. And if you're struggling, if you don't want to reach out to people you know because you're scared, if you don't want to, whatever the reason is, no judgment from me. Never, never, ever, ever.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid. Come say hi.
And usually, I think you kind of already answered it, but I usually ask one question before we wrap up. And like someone out there, maybe they think it's hopeless. Maybe they're in that place on that phone, you know, talking to their father, you know, in that darkness. And you could say one thing to them. You could reach through the phone or the audio or whatever and say one thing to them. What would you want to say?
Every beautiful thing that has happened to me in my life was an opportunity that I had the awareness to understand and accept. And this moment that you're feeling this great pain, this great struggle, is the universe showing you this is your moment. Be aware of it. Walk through the pain. Walk through the suffering. Walk through the struggle. Don't be ashamed. There's going to be people around you who will love you, who will support you. And if there aren't people around you right now, let's find you a place that there are. But don't be ashamed. Don't continue to go down further. Let's just do what we can to build you up.
Oh, I love it. Thank you, Chris. Any links, specific links you want to give out or where people can get a hold of you or contact you?
Yeah, I mean, you can find me at Chris Dreisbach on Instagram. I don't pay too much attention to that one. Christopher Dreisbach on Facebook and TikTok. There's like a link tree thing floating around on all of those things where you can find the links to the Night of Recovery, and then also our docuseries Repurpose, where we went around the country and met with four awesome, notable individuals in recovery and got to share their story in a mini docuseries format. So if you check out Repurposed on Prime Video, that's also available through the link tree. Yep.
Awesome. I'll put all those links in. Give me the links, and I'll put all the links in the show notes as well at theaddictedmind.com. So, Chris, thank you so much for coming on and just sharing your story.
Dude, Dwayne, my pleasure. And thank you again for the opportunity. I'm sorry I had to reschedule it once. And, you know, hopefully we can hang out again.
Absolutely.
I'm Madeline, and I'm the host of the Happiest Sober podcast. I got sober in my 20s after a decade of gray area drinking, and the greatest plot twist of all time was realizing that alcohol, the thing that I thought made my life the most happy and fun and exciting, was actually the exact thing preventing me from living my happiest and best life. My mom is 40 years sober, and she joins me on my podcast very often. I like to call her my part-time co-host, and I also bring you solo episodes where I share my top tips, tricks, and mindset shifts in sobriety, and lots of how-tos for navigating all the things sober, from weddings to parties to holidays to bachelorette parties to trips. I'm also joined by so many guests who come on and share their sober stories, and they're all so, so inspiring. I'm here to show you that life doesn't end when you quit drinking. In fact, it's very much the opposite. And no matter what your relationship was with alcohol, life can be the absolute happiest when you're sober. New episodes come out every Tuesday. You can listen to Happiest Sober podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Addicted Mind podcast. As usual, all the links will be in the show notes at theaddictedmind.com. So check that out there. If you got a lot out of this episode, share with a friend. And don't forget, click the subscribe button in whatever podcast app you use so you can get the latest episode. All right, everyone, have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you on the next episode.